Suzanne Muchin will be here a little bit later. I'm not sure of her costume, but we'll talk a little bit about dressing up for Halloween for girls and things like that. In the second half hour, also, we will talk to Frank Cho, who's the founder of Nexus AI. He says he's got a better way to build business teams. So we start on Tuesdays with John Najarian. You see him on CNBC. Follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. And right here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Great to be with you. Thank you, Stephen.
All right, buddy boy, we're wrapping up October. I've been told October is a rough month for Wall Street, but boy, it doesn't seem like it this year.
No, it seems like just the opposite this year. It has been a great October. If I just take a look at the either S&P or Dow Jones Industrials on a one-month graph, even though we had that dip right around the 24th, 25th of the month, we're still up about 2.5%, and I think most of us can live with that, 2.5% a month.
So
a volatile month, it was a good one.
And so more earnings reports today. I want to talk about Mondelez a little bit, but let's start with Under Armour. It's been a rough day there for the sneakers.
Yeah, and I was just talking about this one on CNBC because I think the world of Kevin Plank, but he changed his structure. As you know, they have two symbols now, UA and UAA, and they changed the structure so that they could control more of the company, much like Mr. Zuckerberg does. He doesn't need two symbols to do that, but he did it right at the beginning of his reign. Mr. Plank did not. Now, the problem with that is, I really think he needs outside help to turn this thing around because he's a visionary and a great leader, started a great company, but now the turnaround expertise is not something that he has. He's, like I say, somebody who gets a vision and runs with it. I don't know that you can get that thing going from this point just using that same vision.
What is slowing them down, John? Did they get too big too fast or try to spread too thin or what happened?
Exactly. You nailed it. They went from apparel into shoes, and that puts them, of course, in both cases, squarely in the sights of Nike and Adidas, as well as, to a certain extent, Lululemon for the apparel. And moving into shoes has never been a profitable move for them. They signed a lot of high-profile athletes like Tom Brady and, of course, like Mr. Curry. And when you have Stephon Curry and Tom Brady, that's a lot of prestige. It also costs you a lot of money.
Yes, it
does. So Plank has said, we've spent way too much for the company size that we are right now. We've got to cut back. We're lowering guidance. They lowered guidance by 50%. That's a ton. And so that tells me they need a turnaround, not just somebody at the helm. They need somebody to turn the thing around.
What do you think the chances of that are?
I don't know that it has to go to zero, but, you know, it's certainly in danger right now. I mean, it's down to $12 a share. It's down, I believe, something like 87% from its peak. Those are dangerous times for a young leader of a company like this, especially since he has basically said, look, I know more about running this than anybody. That's why I'm changing my leadership structure so nobody can tell me anything.
Yeah.
I think that's a dangerous precedent for him.
A little closer to home, Mondelez is out with its earnings report and stock prices. Well, they were up earlier. I'm assuming they're still in positive territory this afternoon.
Yeah, they are. Pardon me. And that one has been one that we've seen a pretty good flow of institutional money. A lot of activists have chased this one in the not-too-distant past. I think they'll be back, and I think that's another reason that you might want to keep a little bit of this around for the year. It's down 6%, so it's one of the stocks that has not participated in this monstrous rally, and it probably gives you some reason to hope that maybe it could be one of the winners into next year.
All right, I want to ask you about what's going on in China, too. You know, I know Facebook and others are talking on Capitol Hill today, but Mark Zuckerberg is in China. Tim Cook is there. Steven Schwarzman from the Blackstone Group is there as well. President Xi gave a speech and talked about becoming, as I read it, more accessible, opening up the trade and the economy to U.S. businesses. Now, he does that just as President Trump gets set to go overseas. And you watch all this stuff. I'm just wondering what you make of that.
That is a positive for Facebook and probably for the populace of China. The negative is that they are squarely in those same crosshairs in this case, not of Nike and Adidas, but instead of the regulators, both in United States and in Europe. So, I mean, if all of a sudden, Steve and I said that, well, you know, all that fabulous stuff that Google and Apple and Facebook do, we think for privacy concerns, we're going to make you cut back on, you know, 80% or 20%, pick a number, whatever percent you think they'll have to cut back of all the data that they've accumulated on us and so forth. The company is worth less, not worthless, worth less because of those kinds of regulations. And I do think at some point they are coming.
All right. It's just about 12:18. What are you watching today? What's your tip?
Sure. Today we were buying U.S. Steel and we were also buying PXD, Pioneer. So both of those, I'd say keep an eye on them. We bought them for ourselves and for clients today.
Great to talk to you, John. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
All right, it's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is in the studio, a senior editor at DNAInfoChicago.com, and we talk about openings and closings here. And, you know, this has been on the radar a little bit, what's going on in Pilsen.
Yeah.
And it really kind of hit overnight. Tell me what happened.
Yeah, so, okay, so we're talking about Pilsen, near northwest or near southwest side neighborhood around 18th Street.
Great, rich, cultural neighborhood.
Settled by the Germans and the Irish in the 1840s. The Czechs came later. Pilsen is actually a city in the Czech Republic. Hispanics, primarily Mexicans, started moving in around World War I, but they really started coming in the 1960s when they got displaced when UIC was built. Okay, so it becomes this Hispanic, heavily Hispanic neighborhood. Now we are seeing an influx of white people back into Pilsen and sort of middle-class people, though a lot of younger people who are looking for cheap rents. So it's changing the face of Pilsen. And now there has been some pushback, anti-gentrification people. Earlier this week, some of the anti-gentrification people confronted the owner of this new restaurant, SKY, basically saying get out. And then overnight,
it was a Facebook Live post, right?
Yes, right. Yeah. So they recorded it, and you could see these people hollering at this restaurateur to get out of the neighborhood, that he's part of the problem, that restaurants like his is driving the rents up. And then overnight, there's been some graffiti on his restaurant and another building there that contains Thalia Hall, which has become a very popular music venue for young people, and basically saying, get out. And so we're seeing a little bit of the situation heating up there in gentrification in Pilsen.
So is it because, you know, it sounds like race intimidation, like the stuff you would have heard in, you know, white neighborhoods, people putting things in black families' yards or something like that. Is this about race here or is this about...
Well, it evidently is about both, because some of the graffiti referred to these to the newcomers as whites or whitees, as they call them, Y.T. And but a lot of it has to do with the economic situation, which is true. Rents have gone up considerably in Pilsen as more whites move in, and this is, you know, an area that has a lot of Hispanics who have been there for a long time, generations.
I mean, tell me, but it does strike me as Pilsen is it's not a unique neighborhood, but it is a defined neighborhood. I mean, it's an established sort of,
right.
And good for you for bringing out how it's developed. I mean, how it started as Czech and all of that. But in the past few decades, it has been sort of a cohesive Mexican-American community.
Right. So over the last decade, so right now there's about 27,000 Hispanics and about 4,600 whites. And those numbers have been going in opposite direction for a decade. Fewer Hispanics, more whites. And this new restaurant, SKY's, at 1239 18th Street, it's what you might expect of a restaurant opening in a gentrifying neighborhood.
Right.
It's kind of fancy food for foodie people.
Filipino,
you know?
Guy, right? And he's got a Korean wife, and he's opening kind of a
fusion. Some Asian influence. He's a well-renowned, well-trained chef, some of the neighbors are not taking to this too well.
All right, well, we'll watch that. What's Solis, right? Is it Alderman Solis?
Yes.
Is that his word? What is he saying?
He hasn't said anything about this now, but he has worked in the past to try and deal with some of the situations. Like if you go to Pilsen and you want to make a development there, a housing development, you're under stricter rules than most of the city in terms of providing affordable housing. But, you know, you just can't stop cheap rents and the neighborhoods from changing.
All right, so that's Pilsen, where people want to go. Let's move now down to Roseland, where people aren't.
Right, right. So this is sort of the ultimate in closing, as I emailed you.
Right.
The city has been demolishing houses. They demolish hundreds every year. And this year, in terms of knocking down houses, the city has knocked down 359 homes. That's 42% more houses this year so far than all of last year. And we mapped it at DNAinfo.com Chicago, and you can see where all these are. And primarily they are in the South Side neighborhoods, and primarily, or a lot of them are in Roseland, which is a very impoverished place.
Can you give me
South
an
Side.
Idea where Roseland is? I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, you would probably go south of Englewood.
Okay.
Or southwest, east of Englewood.
It's interesting. The building committee, I think it was the building commissioner, was before the city council committee. And she goes, look, we don't really have a handle on these buildings until people start complaining.
Mm-hmm.
And the city's trying to turn that around.
Right. So they say that we knock down houses when people complain about them. But what we really need to do is have a comprehensive list of homes that are vacant. And so maybe we can get ahead of them before they reach the point where you have to knock them
right.
down. And, you know, the upside is that these houses are dangerous and they attract crime and fires and everything else. But when you knock them down, what you're left with is sort of a very vacant,
abandoned
feel. Kind
of a surrender.
Feel.
Yeah.
Yes. So.
Andrew Herman, read more at DNAinfo.com/Chicago.
Right.
Thanks for coming by.
Okay.
The Halloween program, Bennett. Wake Night, the producer is all dressed up. I, of course, am in my costume. And, well, here's Polly Pure Bread. Suzanne Mushin is here, the co-host of The Big Payoff. You listen to that on WGNRadio.com about women in the workplace, things like that. Welcome back.
Thank you, Steve. I do like your costume.
Thank you. It's the same one I wear every day.
Yeah.
I am not a costume guy. I have never really been a costume guy.
You look like a radio announcer.
No other adjectives in front of it?
Well-dressed.
Okay, so anyway, are you a Halloween person?
No, okay. Never have been.
And yet you want to talk about Halloween costumes?
I do.
Why?
Because I think that it's changing culturally. I think when we were younger, I mean, you and I grew up in a similar era. I think people really did try to do ghosts and witches and goblins and be scary and
well, adults
spooky.
Didn't dress up.
Adults, that was not a thing.
Right.
Right. It was almost creepy, I think, if you saw an adult dressed up, right?
Right. Grow up.
Grow up. But today, yes, I think there are a lot of adults going out to weekends. I mean, my Facebook feed was full of adult costumes. And not when I say adult costumes, I don't mean like porn or anything.
Right.
I'm just simply saying adults going out dressed in costume. I do think...
We all knew what you meant, but go
did
ahead.
Did you? I feel like you were looking at me like, clarify that.
Only you went down that other way. But anyway, uh-huh. Go ahead.
Thank you for that. So I think that the costumes are changing. First of all, the number one costume this year is Wonder Woman for women and girls. And
really?
And I don't think that's because it's cool or sexy in and of itself. I think it represents to a lot of women a power and embracing their inner strength. So I just think that costumes have turned a corner in the sense that they really are a statement.
And, well, I think I've seen that. We always talk, I mean, it goes back to the 80s when women were dressing up as Fawn Hall,
yes.
You know, during the Iran-Contra. So
yes.
We always have been, or not always, but in the past few decades, reflecting what's going on in the news around us.
I do have a funny story where a friend of mine posted on Facebook that she had dressed up like Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Right?
Again, reflecting,
yeah.
You know, go Ruth. And she showed up at the party and people were like, oh, you're Judge Judy.
Close.
Not really.
No, okay. Okay, so what if you were to go dressed up as a Saudi women's Cubs fan?
Right? First of all, that would be an upsetting costume because it would reflect the reality that as of only a couple days ago, women in Saudi Arabia were not able to attend sports games.
Okay, so let's unpack this a little bit because we all know Saudi Arabia is an ally of ours.
Yes.
A fairly developed country.
Yes.
A wealthy country. And we also know that they are very conservative religious country, and we've talked about the fact that they're just now going to allow women to drive.
Yes.
Why is it different that I just learned women were not allowed to go to sporting events?
Doesn't that, me too. When I read that, it struck me as a real blow. Like, oh my God, they're not even allowed to go to a sport. sporting event?
It's like driving was more understandable than a football game.
I get, none of it's really, to me, understandable, sure. But that could be, to your point, it could be a cultural, you know, disconnect that we just don't understand. But not allowing women to enjoy, and it was not just women, it was women and families. Like, a woman couldn't go with her kids.
Right.
What is that? That just seems so
bizarre. What else can't they do?
Well, I'm sure there's a long list, but here's what was really troubling about it is they have a plan now that is supposed to give women more and more freedom, but it's going to take till 2030.
Is it because they think they need to be eased into it?
I guess that just seems like a really long time. Just let them into the stadium tomorrow.
Right. Although it would have saved women 100 years of heartache if they were Cubs fans. Think of that.
True.
Could be a positive thing.
True.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, we can go there.
All right. We were talking off the air about it, and I'm not sure what. So, you know, we've talked about this for a few weeks now.
Yep.
And, you know, I used to drive. What's his name? Adam Rapp, right?
Yeah.
I used to drive his aunt and uncle to high school.
No way. He's a Chicago kid?
He's his mom was from my hometown.
He was in Rent. I guess that's
yeah,
how
he's from Joliet.
Famous.
I think he grew up in Joliet, but his mom's family lived down the street from me, and I would give his. When we were all in high school together, I'd give them rides to high school. And so he came out and said he was
assaulted
is a good word, as a 14-year-old. So you've got two things. Anthony Rapp, you've got two things. You've got unwanted assault, obviously, and then 14. On a 14-year-old.
Yes. And Kevin Spacey not only made the statement, he apologized and said, I don't remember doing this, but if I did, that sounds horrifying. And then also used it as an opportunity to come out and tell the world what I think most people already knew, which is that he's gay.
I don't quite get the grief of that he's taking for coming out. Like, he's using that as an, I don't think I'm using it as an excuse.
No, maybe like, it was just the obvious notion that he had done this to a boy. I think we're in such, first of all, it's daily now. I mean, you can't open up the paper any morning now without new people coming out. And by the way, from all sectors, it's not just Hollywood, right? We're seeing it in universities, in public life, in policymakers, Springfield. So I don't know that Kevin Spacey is any different. I think what's unusual is this is one of the few we're hearing of a man or at that. Well, he was a man.
He was 26.
Yeah. A man and a boy.
Right.
We've associated all of this with men and young women.
I'm just wondering, because I've said this on The Mincing Rascals and elsewhere, I think that we overcorrect sometimes. And so should a 30-year-old, and I don't know the answer to it, I really honestly don't, should a 30-year-old assault on an underage child be career-ending? I mean, maybe it should,
and
or maybe it shouldn't.
They're claiming that the cancellation of House of Cards was not directly related, which I think is probably, you don't just cancel a show in a day. But I think that the whole thing, first of all, I don't think this is a gender issue with Kevin Spacey. I don't even want to go there. I think it would be equally bad, and you asked this off the air, if it was a 14-year-old girl. To me, that's not the issue here.
I think it would be worse. I think it would be.
Really?
I think people would react more strongly. I do.
I don't.
Okay,
because
that's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. But I think that we're in a moment right now in which there is hypervigilance, a lot of attention and focus on every single predator. And on the one hand, and I've said this in a couple of pieces that I've been quoted in, I think the publicity is important, but it's not going to really change things.
Okay, we're going to have to switch gears quickly here.
We've only got a minute. This is such a big switch.
I know. I want to go. I'm sorry I didn't go on a daddy moon.
Oh, God, Steve. How do we go from Kevin Spacey to...
Let's just go. It's totally my fault.
Let's just go. So here's the craziest trend that I've heard in a long time, and it's becoming a thing now, where men who are expecting a child tell their wives that they're going on this guy trip.
It's your last chance, Suzanne.
Their
whole world's going to change.
I
mean,
your wife would.
Do you have any idea how hard it is for a man to become a dad?
No, actually, not on a first person level. But I just think this is a crazy thing, and I can't imagine that wives, other than maybe to get their husband out of the house.
So here's the question:
a good idea.
Are the dads who go on daddy moons more inclined to be involved dads later, or less inclined to be involved dads later?
My call. Less involved.
I say so too.
Uh-huh.
Because I think if you're going to be really involved. You're not going to leave your pregnant wife when she's like 7 or 8 months
or
pregnant.
Or 8 months pregnant and go on like a guy's trip. No, I say
although
those
it would be
guys
needed. I totally understand the need.
Stop it. See, Steve loves to just do this as we're signing off because he knows he can cut my mic at any point.
So the daddy moon, it is a growing
phenomenon,
sort of thing. Okay.
Along with co-ed baby showers.
Well, that's totally different. That's all about getting more gifts.
I think it's actually a statement that men are trying to make in a good way, which is I'm involved too. I'm a part of this also.
Suzanne, I want you to listen to this closely. Mm-hmm. No man wants to go to any shower of any kind. Okay.
And here's
the
truth.
This is not flexing of anything.
Most women don't either.
On a phone line now is Frank Cho. He is the founder of Nexus AI. Frank, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Steve.
I don't know. Frank, are you on a speakerphone? If so, maybe you can get on the handset. It'd be a little easier to hear you. How's that?
I apologize. I am on a speakerphone, but that's the only available phone device I have in this conference room at the time.
Okay.
So I apologize.
We'll make the best of it. You know, you're going to have to talk slowly to me anyway, because I'm not sure I understand what this is about. You're talking about building a better, your business builds better teams in the office through artificial intelligence and other means. Explain that for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, at a high level, if you think about sort of in any work situation, it's teams that are executing projects that are getting tasks done. And so the performance of a team is really critical, the dynamics of personalities, sort of the skill sets and experiences everyone brings together. What doesn't happen typically in the workforce is really tracking how individuals, how they perform over the course of projects, over the course of a year, et cetera, how they actually interact in these teams and sort of the dynamics when they get staffed on future teams, what is the predictor of success for high performance teams? So what we're trying to do is take a lot of the advances in data science around artificial intelligence, natural language processing, and really start collecting that information at an individual employee level in terms of really monitoring how they do as an individual in terms of their interactions as a team. And then we're taking that data science and really predicting when you take that individual and you start putting them together with other individual, how will that team actually perform? So there's been a lot of research and, you know, it's a decades old challenge of how do I build a better team? And so a lot of the experience I've had from my NASA days, you know, I started my career working in mission control at NASA where the concept of a tiger team where you take a bunch of individual people who have deep domain expertise with a singular focus, and how do you actually solve that tough problem, like when Apollo 13 happened, getting past all those technical challenges and really interacting as a high-performance team was critical.
Okay,
and so you see it to today where companies like Google, where they're doing a lot of research internally to understand what makes a high performance team. We're really following in the thread that has come before, but we're really using the technology and sort of the science that has evolved in the last several decades.
Okay, but Frank, explain for me. So then if I'm going to use you and create a team, am I doing this when I'm doing my first initial hire and creating a team that way, or do you come into a workplace and sort of assign, I don't want to say value, but values maybe, or assign score points to different individuals to see how Amy might work well with Julie or things like that? Or how does it work that way in a workplace?
It's more the case of the second situation where we would come into a company and we would do initial onboarding. And over the period of time, let's say it's several months or however long, we would actually have a continuous feedback mechanism where employees would be able to rate each other, their team members, their managers around projects, around time intervals, and really start collecting that data around things that isn't typically measured.
Is it static? Is it static data? Does it change? I mean, can a team member change his or her skills or develop into a different way?
It's absolutely dynamic. There's nothing static about it, which is the huge differentiator in this situation, because we're constantly asking employees to rate themselves, their experience, how they're evolving. We're asking them to rate their team members, right, their managers. So that's really what we think is the missing piece. And a lot of the feedback is that everything is typically static in an organization and it's really stale data to work with.
What do you think is the most misunderstood value or attraction to a team member? What is it that people maybe don't look for but should?
You know, I really strongly believe it's the communication element around collaboration. There was a Salesforce survey that actually said 90% of employees really believe decision makers should seek other opinions before making a final decision, yet only 40% of employees that feel that decision makers consistently failed to seek that other opinion. You know, there was a Queen's University of Charlotte survey where about 75% of employers rate teamwork and collaboration as very important, but only 18% of employees actually get communication evaluations at their performance reviews. So, you know, people are really talking about we need to do this, but it's actually not happening. And so the whole point of Nexus AI is to really facilitate not only the feedback loop mechanism, but the collection of data where it's not intrusive. It's not, oh, here's another survey I have to fill and I get nothing out of it. We're really trying to take that data and show, for example, if I'm an employee in this company and I'm getting this feedback, well, how am I tracking if I want to get to that manager level role, I want to get to that partner in, role in the company? Here are the attributes that are, these roles typically need. How am I tracking to that? So there's a self-incentive to actually participate in the feedback. So these are all the areas we're exploring. We're not claiming we've locked it down and figured it all out, but these are the areas we're using the data science and sort of all the advances in organizational behavior theory to really get to that answer.
That is Frank Cho. He's the founder of Nexus AI, the website nexusteams.com. Frank, it was great to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.